Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to kick off another episode of When Black Men Talk, the Provocative Talks podcast, where we get together and explore a male's perspective, but sometimes not only male's perspective, on life, love, and relationships. Always shoot for that honest self-evaluation. You know by now we ain't shying away from some things that need to be said. We put that all together. We put it under the heading When Black Men Talk. I'm your host, Mark Elliott. I want to basically take some time out to think Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, for giving us the opportunity to give listeners to give us an ear. And what I've been noticing lately, we have ears outside of this country, and it's growing. A foreign country base of listeners that are listening: Frankfurt, Germany; Trinidad, India. These folks are here tuning in and listening to the show, and we're happy to have you do such. Here's something I want to do for our foreign listeners. I'm going to give you an opportunity to join this show. I'm going to give you a number to dial. You dial this number, and if you want to come on and be part of this at some point and speak why you're clicking in and what you think of what we're doing here, I'd be happy to have you on. So the number to dial is 475-209-3511. Once again, if you're outside of the United States and you're partaking in giving us an ear, feel free to give us a call at 475-209-3511. Let me drop it one more time, and I'll probably give it again before the show is over. 475-209-3511. What I want to do, with that being said, I want to take some time and go back and identify who the hell we are. Because you've probably been listening and just saying, this one is that one is this one, but you may not know as we break it down individually who the hell we are. So I'm going to go first in a sense, and then I'll go to our panelists in a little bit and give them a chance to kind of give you a bio of themselves. As I said earlier, I'm Mark Elliott. I've been hosting this for quite some time. Let's see, how am I now? About 58, looking at 59. Basically, let's say I've been working in the travel industry for the past 29 years, getting ready to pull the plug on that. Over the past few years, I have basically grabbed the camera and learn how to make it talk, open a photography business, and also a physical fitness. Love to help folks with their health and basically kind of improve some areas that can help them live a longer, healthier life. So that's kind of basically who I am. So if you can't see a picture, give you an idea of something that's going on. Three children that I have fathered in this life. One is 42. One is 19, turning 20. One is 12. That kind of gives you an idea of when you hear me speak, what's going on in the background. I'm going to bring in Lady Marcy, and the question is, Lady Marcy, who the hell are you?
Hey there, thank you. So my name is Marcy Batiste. I'm based in Phoenix, Arizona, former banker, now serial entrepreneur. I'm the founder and executive director for a nonprofit organization here called 9 Seconds. And we foster freedom for women, basically, by helping them address the root causes of domestic violence and then equipping them with the resources and the training they need to reclaim their independence. I've got two kids. I'm also in my mid-50s. My daughters are 31 and 28. One's an over-the-road trucker with a very, very sick sense of humor.
Wait a minute. I'll give my age. And I don't go no mid, okay. I don't go no lower.
You never ask the woman's age, man.
No, I ain't asking the woman's age.
Y'all
want
to go
I'm
there.
Okay.
I am no, proud to
give,
say
I'm
that I'm
just pointing it out.
No, y'all not going to do me like that this early in the show. Not tonight. Not tonight. I am 62. I am 52 years old, proudly 52, and I will be 53 on December 11th. So you still got some time to get your shopping in, fellas.
Listen to you, Maurice, baby. Who the hell are you?
Wow. I'm D. Maurice Waddell. I'm an author. I'm a professor, social work, and African an African American studies writer, podcast producer, video producer, martial artist, a son and daughter, 25 and 24, 55 years old. Because I know you're waiting for me to say my age, bro. Because, you know, if you said it, you want everybody else to do it, too. So, yeah, 55. Don't look it. I'm always told I look much younger than
That's
a blessing.
I know that's right. Yeah. I know that's right.
So that's a little bit of who I am.
I wanted to do something, too, man. I was thinking about this the other day. I remember, and I know we may have all had this point in our lives where you're talking to God, and God just doesn't talk back. And I remember years ago when I was working in radio, and I decided when I was younger, radio just wasn't stable enough. It wasn't stable enough. It wasn't profitable enough. And I said, you know, I love this, but I must move on to do something else. So at that time, I decided I wanted to start a business. It was a limousine service. And I was living in Carolina, South Carolina at the time, and I decided I was going to move to Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina. Did the business plan, had everything going, and I'm going to start this business. Okay. So from there, I find myself how some things have happened in life. Find myself coming back to Connecticut for a short period of time and decided that I was going to, you know, take up residence here. And, of course, that kind of all went to the wayside when that took place. It happened. So in the process of that happening, I kind of fell into what I'm doing now, what I've been doing for the past 29 years. And I remember when I first started working it, I saying to myself, you don't like this too much. You know, you don't like it. It ain't creative enough for you. It ain't enough juice. It ain't enough energy. It's not what you're used to. So during work sometimes, I would literally take a little sidestep, and I was say to God, why am I here? You know, why you have me doing this? But in essence, I'd have never felt like he said anything back to me. He didn't come back. He never gave me a response. And I'm asking the question. After I did it a few times, of course, I stopped asking. But over the years and how things have evolved and it played itself out, he's allowed me to see why he put me here. So the question is, I'll come back to you first, Lady Marcy, is has there been a time when you can think about you asked God a question and he didn't answer, but he allowed the answer to play out in your life?
I think God is the great opportunist. That's one of my mentors always says that. And I would add that I think he is the greatest comedian of all time.
Absolutely.
Because because you look and you're just like, wow, did this really happen? And so I think for me, when I look at my work with domestic violence, right? So I grew up in an abusive household, vowed that I would never be that girl. Fast forward 30 years, I was in the mirror, black and blue face, busted lip, whole nine yards. And they're just like, I remember in that moment being like, how did I get here? And I'm literally like, God, you're the only person that can answer this for me, because I did all the things that I thought I knew to do to prevent this from happening. And so now that I can look back on it, you know, a decade later, and all of the things that I've done and accomplished since then, I can see now that that journey was in many ways preparation for my purpose. And had I not been through, there's been a number of times along the way when I'm faced with questions or obstacles or people that I care about in certain situations. And had I not had the experiences and the traumas that I had to overcome, I would have not been in a position to be able to serve them. So while all those things were happening, I'm questioning, like, why me? And to your point, there's no answer. There's no nothing. But in hindsight, I can look back and I can honestly say, particularly with the domestic violence, like I feel like he made it bad enough to change me, but not bad enough to kill me. So the purpose was to do what I do now. And so, but it was in hindsight. There was no verbal, like, here you go, girl, do this. Like, I didn't get that. There was no download for it. And it's only in hindsight that I see what it was about.
I'm going to say this before I go on to Mr. Dave Maurice. Myself, Mr. Reese, Mr. Charles has been doing this for at least, what, 3-4 years, and I might be shorting this by a year. And, you know, we have went in on different topics, and there's not much we probably haven't talked about, shared, open up, you know, really went strong on. And to have Lady Marcy join us, and from the rip, when I say from the rip, and the first time she opened her mouth, show that she belongs and she can hang, I'm a give her an applause, because and this ain't easy. We may get made sound like it's something easier we could do, but when you're ready to open up and expose yourself and just don't care, yeah, you got a table here, and you have a chair, I should say, here, and she's been sitting in that chair and doing an awesome job. So I want to compliment you on that, and thank you for being part of what we do. With that being said, Mr. DeMaurice, I'm going to come to you. Oh, you're more than welcome. Mr. DeMaurice, I'm going to say to you, sir, you know, I know you think you're looking younger for your age, you know, I know. 55 is the new 15. I got you, bro. We understand. We understand that. We caught that.
Hey.
No, hey, bro. I'm just complimenting you. You can't take the compliment. Anyway.
What are you doing here today?
I caught that special. Oh, a time that our Heavenly Father spoke to you. The time that you asked him or you were speaking to him, it just seemed like he wasn't answering.
Yeah, there are a few times. And even in the current, in the present, you know, you're asking for things like, okay, you know what I want. How come I'm not getting it? But I was talking to some students the other day, and they're early in their academic career, and they were asking me, you know, how did you get here? And I'll tell the story here. I came out of college, radio and television. That's all I wanted to do. When I came to Chicago, it seemed like everything was kind of wrapped up, because you don't know anybody in Chicago. And the saying here in Chicago, if you don't know anybody, you're not going to get anywhere. So you got to know some people. And that's how you get to kind of where you're connected in certain industries in Chicago. Anyway. That was kind of dried up here. So I started to work with a social work agency in Cabrini Green. And when I first started working there, all my buddies and friends were like, you know, what are you doing there, man? You know how dangerous it's over there? You know, you're going to get shot, this, that, the other. And I've been in dangerous situations before, so I really never really looked at it as dangerous. I felt like I was needed there for some reason. I had to go there, and that was open. And once I start going there, I start asking, you know, why am I here? Why am I doing all this stuff? And so for about 10 years, I've been like in social services in particular certain situations, trying to figure out why am I here? Why am I working with the elderly? Why am I working with youth? Why am I doing marriage counseling? Why am I running domestic violence programs and youth programs and abstinence programs, all these different programs. And so back in the late 90s, I was working at this agency for fathers and developing programs there. And what happened was is that there was a board member who is still a professor at the University of Chicago. So once or twice a quarter, he would always have me lecture a class there. And so for about 2 or 3 years, this was going on. And one of the, what happened is a lot of the other professors were coming and listening to my lecture because I was a guest lecturer. And so one time they came up to me after class and they said, Dr. Waddell, where did you get your master's from? And I said, well, I don't have a master's. You don't have a master's? You don't have a PhD? I'm like, no, I don't have a PhD. So I guess they started getting in his ear. And he came to me maybe 2 days later, and he's like, you got to come here to go to grad school. And I'm like, why? And I said, you know, I'm just doing lecturing, I'm working. He's like, no, you're making me look bad. He said, because they don't come to my lecture. They come when you come to lecture in my classes. So you really make me look bad. So that he won't let me apply anywhere else. And I applied there, and I went there. Now, as I was going to get my letters of recommendation, you heard me talk about Professor Ball a lot on this show. I think the woman was magic. I think she had certain powers. So usually, you know, students now, they just email you, can you send me a recommendation? You can kind of send it to the school. I live in Chicago. Professor Ball lives in Ohio, Wilberforce, Ohio. And I called her and asked her for a recommendation. She said, you're going to have to come to Ohio and get it. And I'm like, I got to drive 6 hours to go get this. And I knew it was an important recommendation, but I'm like, I got to drive 6 hours. And I sat there and talked to her about for about 2 or 3 hours. And in our conversation, she wrote this book about being a teacher and how to be a teacher, how to approach that, things of that sort. And so she said, she handed me the book about being a teacher. I had no thoughts about being a teacher. And she's like, you're going to need this. Because she was sitting down with me, kind of helping me kind of map out what I'm going to do with the degree. She wanted to know that. She wanted to catch up on my life, things of that sort. She wanted to know where my head was. And so, like I said, middle of the conversation, she handed me this book. And I'm like, okay, this is the book she wrote, she wants me to have. And she autographed it. And inside it was the recommendation. And the recommendation was never dated because she said, I want you to keep using this recommendation. And so, lo and behold, you know, doing my work, University of Chicago, I started working with the city of Chicago as a consultant, and I started doing some presentations. And then there's a guy who walks up to me who knew a friend of mine and said, you ever think about teaching? And I'm like, no, not really. He said, I want to introduce you to the chair of this program of social work department, and I think you'd be a great addition to, you know, to the university. I'm like, okay, well, I never really thought about it. I had a two-hour conversation with her, and she was like, you got to come here, and you have to teach. So my first day of teaching, and I started telling them the experiences I had in the field, it suddenly hit me why I was doing all that stuff, why I was taking that 10 to 15 year journey in the field, learning the craft, so I can explain to them what they're seeing in the book in real time and in a reality-based kind of situation on how to use these theories, things of that sort that I've been doing for years, never really thought about. But all of it came rushing back. I wasn't getting the answers in that 10-year period of why I was working with all these different populations, what I was doing. But it was when I started teaching, the first time I started teaching, I'm like, oh, okay, now I get it. I get it. It wasn't for me at all. All that stuff was not for me. It was for the future generation and other folks going into the field. So I was being used as a vessel to help other students or other practitioners go out there and do what they do. And so all the time I was thinking about me, you know, what's this doing for me and how am I benefiting? No, it had nothing to do with me. And that's what I had to realize sometimes, that sometimes you go through things in life and God doesn't speak to you because it's not for you. He's using you to do other things. And because if it was up to you, I know if it was up to me, I'd really mess it up. But sometimes it's best that when he's silent, you keep doing it because he's kind of nudging you and pushing you in directions to do it. But you realize it's not for you. It's for other people.
Mr. Charles, we got to get you in here, sir. We want to first to ask you, who the hell are you? We're doing that because we have listeners that are listening all around the world, actually outside the United States, and we're giving them an opportunity to kind of maybe join us at some point. But we wanted to give them an idea when they're listening to us, who we are, you know, what we mean when we say what's behind the words, some of the words that we speak, something about our character. They know a little about the world we have traveled, but basically give them an ID to us that they can't see. They just can hear us. So when they hear us speaking, they know, you know, who we are, where we come from. And outside of that question, once you finish that, Mr. Charles, you can roll right into a time in your life. Basically, you were asking God something and he did not answer back.
That's a lot for $2, bro. No, I'm just playing.
Bro.
Harold and my feet.
Make it happen.
Anyway, thanks for having me as always. But I have no sense, and I think that's a kid that keeps me strong. I'm blessed in that way. Pretty much simple guy, man, coming from Dayton, Ohio. Only child for the most part. My mom passed when I was real young. My dad picked up the mantle and drove through of taking care of me. And with limited things at his disposal. And gave me a blueprint, bro. I had to live life by myself. And I've been doing it that way ever since. A lot of people that have been involved in my life to help me along the way. Met some beautiful people that have been great supporters. But it's almost like my dad knew what was going on with me and gave me what he needed to give me before he passed away by the time I was 21. So I've been pushing through ever since, blessed in a lot of ways with some fabulous people that I met and continue to meet every day. In regards to the thing that you mentioned about the Lord giving you something. When you ask for something, you get a response and him showing you something without saying a word. I feel like that's my life, particularly when it comes to major events. When there's a void or if I'm at the end of a journey, then it's right there. I'll try to give you a couple quick examples, make it real short. Coming out of when I finished college, Mr. Dean Reese and I both went to Wilberforce University. When I finished college and had even finished through, I was trying to look at some things as far as grad school as well. I was looking for a job and I couldn't find it, so I always wanted to be a sports writer. Ended up at a black newspaper, African American newspaper, and just hustling, pushing through. And before you know it, I kept asking myself, I really want to work. What do I want to do? I want to work for a daily newspaper as a sports writer. And thought I was doing pretty good work. Tried, no matter what I did for years, like 7 years, I could never get through along that journey. I could never get hired. I thought I was doing something wrong. I thought something was wrong with me. And then all of a sudden, as I'm saying, man, what's wrong? I'm talking to the top-notch people in this actual industry. And they said, just keep pushing, keep pushing. One day, something, I think the Lord spoke to me. And it was like, why are you trying so hard to get validation from these individuals or these companies? And I'm saying to myself, well, that's because when you make it at ESPN or Sports Illustrated or whatever newspaper, you're a great writer. And that was my mindset. And then it was brought to me that you're now the sports editor of a minority newspaper. You have a platform to do whatever you want to. You basically can make this vehicle your own. What you're looking for, sir, is writing your hand. Open up your hand. And that's without anybody ever saying a word that's been spoken to me. And I thought about it, and I was like, I'll be daggone. That it was absolutely right. I could do whatever I wanted to on a weekly basis. So instead of worrying about trying to receive validation from the so-called top-notch folks on the upper echelon level, I dove in and took all of my talents and skill set and placed it right into where I was at. And the results were phenomenal because I went from being just an editor of a so-called black newspaper, wasn't getting a lot of love at that time, to being an individual along with the company that I took up with myself. We rose together. So I went from that to covering Super Bowls, professional boxing, Final Four basketball, you name it, I was doing it. And people were looking at me like, how in the hell are you at a black newspaper doing all this stuff? And I was like, I can't even tell you. And that was one of the things that I really looked at, one of the first examples from that standpoint. And then the second example, instead of three, I'll just do two. The second example has been going for a while. For like the last 10 to 15 years when I was doing whatever I was working with, doing marketing and whatnot, I would write notes just about what I was feeling, call it a diary, whatever things I was thinking about myself, things I had been going through, not really giving any thought to it whatsoever about how I could use this or not even thinking I could use it. This is just something I felt I needed to write down. So I was writing stuff down. And I literally had little pieces of paper everywhere over a 10, 15-year period. And I'm like, all right, here you go again with these notes. And all of a sudden, I started talking to individuals like the great friend over there, Mr. D. Maurice, talking to me about certain things. And then it just dawned on me that people were telling me, you might have a book. And I was like, man, I'm not writing a book. The hell y'all talking about? Who want to read about me and what I've been through? And he kept speaking to me, and I kept reading through these things. So all of a sudden, during the pandemic, a little bit before then, I started really looking at what I was talking about and reading all these notes, brought them all together, And according to Diva Reese, it's not one book, it's two books. So with all that being said, it's almost as if this is what I have for you. I really took it seriously. I dove into it and paid attention. And through the grace of God, I'm going to have a book done by the end of the year, bro. So, yeah, the first book. So, yeah, that you talk about speaking, because there's no way in heck. Charles? Bro, really? A book? Nah. That's what authors like Dee Maurice wrote 6, 7, 8, 9 books. That's what they do. I'm just a dude, man. I mean, I have the training as far as communication and marketing and public relations, but I never saw myself as an author God be the glory. That's going to happen. We even had the title and even the cover, so just a matter of time. So I would say that clearly for me was the Lord speaking to me, because I can't even take credit for that because I know myself. Thank you.
And that's who we are, ladies and gentlemen. You put us all together. That's who we are. And thank you again for giving us a listen. I want to send some congratulations out to a couple of individuals. One is Mr. Eric Adams. January 1st, he will take office as the mayor of New York. This is the second time a black person has become the mayor of New York. And in Boston, Mass., this is the first time a woman or an Asian will be elected to an office of mayor. Michelle Wu will step in as the mayor of Boston, Mass. This is from Black Man Talk, Mr. Dee Maurice, Mr. Charles Mark Elliott, and Lady Marcy. We'll take a little short break. We come back. We'll talk about L-O-V-E, love.
Don't know the right words to say, I'm not magic. Don't hold the world in my hand. Wish I could fly through the air like a hero, but I'm just someone who loves you, that's all I am. Wish I could take you away to a palace, make you the queen of the land. All the riches and gold, I don't have them. I'm just someone who loves you, that's all I have. Love that's pure and sacred.
You know, it's funny, love is a beautiful thing. It's not something you can walk into a department store and just take off the rack and grab. It's not something you basically can go on Amazon and have it shipped to you basically overnight or Prime or whatever. But it's something that if you experience it and you use it in the right way, there's nothing better than it. There's nothing better than L-O-V-E and good old love. And ironically, love basically carry a lot of tangible health benefits, such as lowering blood pressure, whoever thought that, reducing anxiety, improving immunity. And when you think about it, they say, researchers say it can basically, you know, remove pain, lessen pain, and give longer life. Now, the longer life part I can kind of understand if it's done correctly. But sometimes they say men tend to die earlier at a rate than women do when they're in love. We'll talk about that some other point because I got a theory behind that. But without that, going beyond that, I will say, I wonder this, Mr. Dee Maurice, when you were in love in the past, when you experienced it, were you ever think about these benefits, or you were just basically focused on the glowing feeling that you were feeling inside, sir?
No, I wasn't really thinking about the benefits. And when I was looking over this question, when you sent it, I guess there was so much drama going on that you never really get to think about those kind of benefits happening. Because as I thought about this and the relationships I did have, not all of them, but some of the major ones, it was, it was like, no, it was completely opposite. It rose your pressure up. You were more stressed because it was basically drama behind it. And you never really got to the benefits of the health benefits of love outside of, you know, just sex, and that being a stress reliever, and that being a thing that helps your immune system. But no, it was more so a lot of the relationships I had, you know, folks bringing in baggage, and it was more stressful trying to be the supportive or the rock in the relationship and trying to make sure everything was good. And you never really got to the love part. You're giving everything you can, but you're not getting any of the benefits of the love part. So this is a good question, and it was something I had to really look at myself. There were some relationships that were that, you know, and especially in the beginning, those pheromones, and you get that feeling of, you know, you really found someone and all that other stuff. And I feel it in the beginning, but to sustain that over a period of time, sometimes it gets a little bit stressful, and then you kind of don't see the benefits of being in this relationship, because it's not a relationship that has really kind of the benefits of love, and that you're not feeling that, and you're kind of feeling like you're giving so much that this is not a position I want to be in, kind of feeling.
Lady Marcia, I'm wondering, you know, when you was in love, you experienced it in the past, were you thinking, hey, Mom, look, I'm boosting my immunity? Were you thinking that, or feeling like you're reducing your anxieties? Some of these things, were you focusing on while you were in love?
Oh, absolutely. It was all about the health benefits for me. No, I'm just kidding. It was totally not. for me, like, I feel like nobody ever talks about a realistic expectation of what love is. So, like, let's take marriage, for example, and you get married. Let's take the example of the couple who meets, falls, quote, unquote, in love, and gets married, you know, 3-6 months later. A year and a half later, they're getting a divorce because they didn't really know each other, et cetera, and so on. So is it really love? Like, I don't think we ever take the time, and I know nobody ever had a conversation with me that, A, talked about health benefits of it. For sure, definitely not that. But really, what is a realistic expectation? So I think that for girls anyway, the goal, you know, and I say this all the time, I'm going to keep saying it till somebody hears me. The goal is for us to get the Prince Charming, have the babies, have the house, get married, you know, et cetera and so on, in whatever order. It's not really ever about love. And so I think we are brought up to equate having a relationship to having love. And relationship and love are not synonymous, but we try and make them be synonymous, and then wonder why we're disappointed. So never, ever, I don't even remember anybody having a conversation with me about love, let alone what it entails or health benefits or any of those things. And in fact, I was married for 16 years. I was with my ex-husband for 18 years in total. And I can probably honestly tell you that while I had love for him, I was never in love with him. I married him for a different reason that had nothing whatsoever to do with love. So that's a long answer to say no. Mm-mm.
Yeah. You touched on a lot of different good factors there, because that's interesting, because even for men, I don't think we were raised to understand what love is. We were, a lot of us probably were told, you know, find a good woman that's going to treat you right. Don't cheat on you. You know, raise some churn. But they never spoke of love. No one ever speak of it. And it's not until, for most of us, until we stumble upon it, what is we're feeling, and really decide to go deep into it, to understand it, to realize it, what it's supposed to be. But we didn't have that idea. And if you don't really pay attention to it, like you spoke and said, you think other things equate love, and it really doesn't. It really don't. Mr. Charles, same question for you, sir, because we look at lowering blood pressure and reduce anxiety, improve immunity. When I'm reading this, when I come across this, and I know researchers, you know, put this together, but when I'm reading this, I'm saying to myself, this is why God wants us to love each other, realistically. I mean, even outside of a relationship, this is why he pushes and cherishes love, because there's such greatness behind it. It's more than that googly eye feeling, ooh, I love you, you love me, and we saying it to each other before we go to bed at night. It's rooted in things that basically help men and women to survive and strive in life. So in a way, it's kind of a silly question, but it's an eye-open question, Mr. Charles, because we never, I don't think most of us ever look at love in this spectrum where this is what we was gained from it. So I'm asking you, sir, you know, when you were, you know, doing your love thing, you was out there being Sir Charles and being in love, were you experiencing these things, sir? Or thinking about these things?
I was thinking about them, but I wasn't experiencing them. Anyway, let's just keep that 100. It sounds great, and I think you're absolutely right. I think when you think about love and you understand love, it should feel that way. It should be something that can be that have that much of an effect on your life. But as you mentioned, not knowing what love is and not knowing really how to approach it can make you do certain things and sometimes make wrong choices. I say that about myself because I think some of the people that I was maybe looking to connect with in a relationship maybe were not the best people for me to experience what we're talking about. And maybe choosing those individuals or we choosing each other for different reasons, maybe that was not going to allow us to experience that love. And I look back on it, and I'm like, well, I went that way. I should have went over here because this woman loved me. The other woman was like all in. And could have perhaps we could have established a stronger relationship and a partnership to experience that type of love. So, unfortunately, no, I haven't it didn't work out that way for me, but I also really think that it's possible. But gotta do a lot of work, and it takes some really deep soul searching and find the right person that wants to put the work in together.
So true. You know, love is rooted primarily in the emotional stage, spiritual, mental intimacy, and I want us to kind of spend some time with the mental part of it, because we know love gets to be emotional. It gets to, with the emotional part of it, it can get out of hand. We have a good idea of the spiritual intimacy of love. We get that. But I think where sometimes we go off rail is with the mental intimacy. And mental intellectual intimacy is comfort of communicating beliefs and viewpoints without worrying about potential conflicts. Basically a meeting of the minds. And here's where, you know, I heard you said, Mr. DeMaurice, the drama and all that other stuff that kind of went on in the past. This could be the element where it causes harms in relationships. Just the simple meeting of the minds, because the comfort of communicating beliefs, you know, sometimes people communicate and they want to basically, wherever you are, I know when I was married, I'll just say that. I think sometimes she would wait for me to say something just so she could disagree. And I could say, you know, the sky is blue. Nah, the sky is purple this morning. It's just that simple, basically, disagreement. And it's interesting, and I say that to say there were times I just would test that theory just to say something, just to see how it was going to go. And the majority of times it came back that way where there wasn't a meeting of the minds. So I'm wondering, when you look at this, and I'm not saying – what I experienced in the past or whatever I came across is singular to me, because I'm sure a lot of times when we're going through something, we think it's just happening here. It's just happening here. You know, they have it better over there. Then you realize you talk to them. No, they was kind of dealing with it too, maybe in a different form, in a different fashion. But I'll come to you first, Mr. Charles, in a sense where in the meeting of the mind, the mental intimacy that goes with love, how does it seem like, how that gets to be so complicated when one, to say they love each other, but probably, you know, don't understand what love is, they really don't love each other. But when two come together and say, I love you, you love me, how is that mental intimacy so harsh and so hard to kind of deal with? I think Mr. Charles might have got up out of here. Hang on a second. Mr. Charles, if you heard the question, let me come back to you. Did you hear this question? So I can reroute it back to you.
Yeah, just reroute it because you had me on mute, bro. You trying to blame me? I heard.
Nah, bro. Nah, you hung up, my brother. I'm looking at the board. Don't blame me for what you did. But anyway. Anyway, let me just say this. I was saying earlier, you know, when you decided to hang up. Anyway, the mental intimacy is a part of where two minds don't meet. And I'm wondering sometimes, from your past experience, just looking at love in general, is that the part that basically kind of derails relationships sometimes? Because it seems like sometimes when people are speaking within a relationship, their minds are just not meeting. And it seems like it's a hard thing to do. It seems like it would be a simple thing to do, especially if you love someone. It seemed like that would be a simple thing to do, but why does it seem like it's so complex for two minds just to coincide and kind of get along and meet?
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with how a relationship can be derailed, because I think about if people are on the same page, enjoy the same type of humor, and also to be able to move forward together in life, and think about different things. It's something that overall they can do magical things together, and it can make for a great life. But when you're not on the same page, and you might nitpick with another person what they're saying, and you're living almost like you're living two different lives, and always going at one another. That's easy to have the relationship derail from that standpoint. So I just imagine, because I know I've been in relationships where just for a few moments, it just felt magical, felt great. Thinking about the same thing and the same goals, the same ideas. And if that's on point, there's nothing that can stop you. And you might be a great example to others. But when it's wrong, you'll know it. And I don't think it will take long for that to, again, unravel your relationship or cause major strife.
I'm going to say this real quick. I think sometimes for men, when we're in relationships, we have an argument, or you want to make it a disagreement, we have a disagreement, and we may think the disagreement is over after we stop talking, but it's not over. So there goes the difference of the mind, because you can start talking about something else, and the conversation moves on, but they're going to pull in that argument that wasn't settled in their mind, and it kind of moves in to that particular new conversation, and there goes the lack of the meeting of the minds. Lady Marcy, when I ask, you know, you come in on this, because here again, the mental intimacy of a man and a woman basically finding the meeting of the minds and basically communicating beliefs and viewpoints without conflicts. When you hear that, does that say to you, without that, you know, you're going east, I'm going west?
I think for me, one of the things that I talked about in Help Wanted, the newest book, is the three things that I feel like make love work, make relationships work, and that's communication, clarity, and consistency. And all of those things, I feel like in order for us to have a meeting of the minds at all, we have to be willing to have some really uncomfortable, transparent conversations in the very beginning. Because I think a lot of times we go into relationships and we feel like if I'm honest or I show you who I really am or I let you know how I really think or what I really believe or how I really feel or how I was raised or what's happened to me, that you'll leave. And so our honesty and our transparency about who we are, we believe, puts the relationship or the potential for the relationship at risk. So we would rather stuff that down and hold on to it for the sake of trying to preserve the relationship, when what really happens then is exactly what you said. Like, it ends up coming out later. So you thought that the conversation was over because y'all talked about the thing you felt you needed to talk about. But in her mind, she's had this other stuff that's been in her pocketbook the whole time. It's just, it took this one thing to sort of bring that out. And so I think if you don't have those conversations very early on, and they're difficult to have, it's awkward and it's uncomfortable and it's scary. But I think if you don't have them and have that open line of communication and create a safe space to dialogue with each other, then you're almost doomed later because it's hard to go back. It's like selling a widget for $75 and then next month you want to mark it up to $5,000. Like, no, I want the other widget. I don't want the $5,000 widget. But you can't go back. And I think a lot of times in the communication realm, we try and go back and talk about things we should have talked about a long time ago. But now we're a year and 3 years and 5 years, and now I'm vested and I'm invested in it. How do I have these conversations? And so we try and fight for position instead of actually communicating. And then it's a losing proposition for both parties. You can't get it solved, and it's hard to find that space where it's a meeting of the minds because you didn't come into it on an even, honest plane to begin with.
So true. That's amazing right there. Mr. DeMarie is coming to you, sir. We're speaking of meeting of the minds and mental intimacy that is necessary for a relationship to strive to grow. It seemed like it's hard, though. And Lady Marcy broke it down and explained where it goes back to the beginning and how basically it starts off well, but you may not know later that it's off well because you didn't really take care of the things early on that you've been taking care of. So I'm wondering, from the point of basically the communicating point, it just seems like at some point, you know, you spoke of the drama. At some point, there's not a meeting of the minds, for whatever reason. There's a conflict in viewpoint, so there's no comfort in communication. The comfort is gone, and we want to get your opinion on this, sir.
Yeah, I don't think I can kind of top Miss Marcy or kind of add any more. But I remember there used to be this show called Baggage that Jerry Springer used to do. And it was a show, I don't know if anybody ever saw it, but it was a show where they had three contestants who was, they were looking for a date, and one person had to choose which baggage that they could live with and which baggage they couldn't live with. And so the person would reveal the biggest kind of drama in their baggage until you got to the final two contestants. And you had to choose between the two. And sometimes I think where the communication really kind of stops is where a person feels like, I have all this baggage, and I have some baggage that is going to be a deal breaker in a relationship. And so I want to really make sure that this person is going to accept it once I reveal it. And then I've been in situations where in the relationship, the person I'm in a relationship with, not wanting to reveal that baggage, will sabotage the relationship, will do things and say things and act in ways where they're trying to get out of the relationship because they know they're getting to that point where, you know, all cards have to be facing up at this particular point. You know, things are getting serious. Things are getting to the point where you got to disclose this stuff for it to go forward, and rather than do that, they'll sabotage the relationship or find a way for it to end or to end it for some frivolous reason that and I know this because once they do that and realize that, you know, really I messed up, then they try to come back and it's like, no, you know, I'm not trusting it now because, you know, you kind of bailed out in the last time, so what makes you think that I'm going to kind of give the same, you know, as I did last time. So it's really kind of crazy how that happens where people are just not really on the same wavelength as far as communication, sharing, and being intimate with each other on a much more emotional and spiritual level, where they kind of hold back on that. And instead of, sometimes they'll give it up and then you kind of have to make the decision, because I don't think people realize once they give up that particular baggage that they've been holding, that you've given the other person the choice whether or not they want to stay or they want to go. And the fact that that person may say, well, you know, this is a deal breaker for me, I think I'm going to bow out this, I don't think people want that rejection. So they may act in a number of ways to either sabotage the relationship or hold on to that particular drama or particular baggage and just try to kind of power through the relationship, and that's not going to work. when, you know, you're asking for all cards face up and that person is reluctant in facing those cards up. And then we, I was talking, and this is a little bit off subject, but I was talking about this with some ladies that were at a gym that I work out at, and they were like, you know, why is all the guy like this song, Smoking Out the Window? I said, because that's a song that's a conversation between two men that are hurt, that they actually turn into a song. And most men have been through that situation where you don't even smoke, but you feel like you got to sit in the car and you got to think about some shit before you make a decision of what you're going to do next. And I said, that's basically what that song is, and that's why men love that song. So it's you gotta play relationships face up in the cards up. And when somebody in a relationship is not doing that, that's going to cause a lot of problems with that relationship going forward.
Vulnerability, my brother. Vulnerability. It's huge. Stay with you with this, Mr. Maurice, because, you know, love is a beautiful thing. It's all that. It can lower your pain level and all that stuff, which is great. But are we really wanting love? Or is love necessary? I believe it's necessary, but are we really wanting it? It's the question I'm going to come back to you with, and all of us in a sense. Are we really wanting it? Are we to a point where we see everything that kind of comes with love that's attached to it, and there goes the lusty desire for it? So I'll take away the necessary parts, love necessary, because in reality, love is necessary. So I'm going to scrap that point. So I'll come to you with that, Mr. Reese. With what we know about love for where we are, you know, do we really want it?
You know, love is all-encompassing. So, but, you know, some of the stuff that comes along with it, it's like, I know I'm at the point where I don't know if I can do this. Because if it comes with all this, that gets me away from that feeling. I mean, I think TV sometimes and movies mess you up too, because you see commercials, you see the holidays are coming around, everybody's, you know, it's cuffing season, everybody wants to be booed up and all that other stuff. And I start thinking about that, and then I'm like, okay, there's some other stuff coming with this that I don't have the energy for, or I'm just not, you know, not in the mood, or I don't have the patience for it at this particular time. And so that's where I get when I think about love, and it's all encompassing. When you love somebody, you love all of them. But I'm at the point where, can I handle all of that at this particular time? I want the good, but can I handle the bad? Because it's not just all goody-goody gumdrops and, you know, it's going to be all right every day. And so I guess where I am with it is that, you know, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is this person that I'm going to be connected with, is it worth, you know, handling everything else about it because I want this feeling of love, or I feel like I should have this feeling of love? And that's where I am currently.
He went to Jared, Mr. Charles. You're going to see that commercial from now to probably the first of the year.
Oh,
he
yeah.
He went to Jared, Mr. Charles. But so we know what that is, man. And you're right. Television has basically set a level, even from us, from a child, when you think about it. And it has set a level of fantasy, romantic thoughts, ideas. And we assume people are living this magical, romantic life, the way they gloss it up and give it to you. And what it does is it really plays with your expectations. And it gives you a false sense of what love is and what romantic really, what could be romantic for one couple may not be romantic for everyone. But they make you feel like you should be doing this. And if you're not feeling that way and she's feeling that way or vice versa, that person's trying to have that, and you're like, we don't need that to be us. So you're right. Television has played a role. And you know, I've said on this show several times, and it blew me away when I was reading a New York Times article years ago, and I still sometimes make my head just shake a little bit when I think about this. And they broke it down. They were saying the average black American spend 6 to 7 hours a day. Think about this, a day watching television. A day. And you know when those shows are running, whatever is running, all those imagery and the stuff they're trying to sell to you, subliminally or not, they're always trying to put something in front of you to basically get you to do something. Imagine your mind getting hit with stuff like that 6 and 7 hours a day. Just constantly, boom, 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 it's coming to you. It has to play with your psyche. There's no other way. And, you know, I said it then, I'll say it now. We gotta break that spell. There's no way in the world we should be sitting in front of anything if it's not constructive and benefiting us as a race of people that long on a daily basis. That's way too much energy and time we're giving to something that's not good for us. Mr. Charles, again, you know, he went to Jared. So is love, we're going to take away the necessary part, is love is something that we want, or we just feel that at this point we should just have?
I think love is something that you want. I do agree with Dee Maurice in regards to, you got to ask yourself, can you push through and give what is needed? But I think part of that goes along with understanding the person you're with. And at this point in my journey, I think that's very important. I think that Lady Marcy mentioned about having a discussion and about relationships and about, even about who you are and understanding that. Like, some people need time by themselves. Doesn't mean I don't like you, I don't want to be around you, but if I've been accustomed to being a person that's done a lot by myself, there are some times that you might need something to do some things on your own too. So when we come together, then it's a connection. And we really enjoy being around each other. But I think you got to have that conversation. But, yeah, I think it's love. We all want love. I mean, even though it may hurt, you go, well, man, you good guys go, man, yeah, I really want that love. But as Dee Maurice said, we're going to take all that, man. I don't know. Cause she's going to try to make me do this and all this and that. I feel real good where I'm at right now. So that means I got to give up certain things because she don't understand me. I'm going to stay where I'm at in my chair, bro. And I watch from afar. And I'll read those Hallmark cards, and I'll go, oh. And, all right, enough of that. Let's get back to what I'm doing. Anyway, yeah, man, we want it, but question is, how do you get it, and are you willing to do what it takes to get it, and having some real-life conversations with a person to, so they know that, you know all about you and you know all about them.
I'll say this, man. I love having great immunity. I do, you know, blood pressure. Yeah, I want that to be lower. I didn't even think about anxiety. I didn't even think about it. So, yeah, love is something that I would say, yeah. I mean, I understand what comes with it, but even the ills of it is not going to make me totally give up on it and act like it's not necessary. And Mr. Charles, you're bouncing what you said. It all depends who you're with. It really does. It depends who you basically with. And I think a lot of times in the past, you can't go give your love to everybody. Everybody's not worthy of your love. And what happens is sometimes I think we have to spend time giving our love to folks that's just not worthy. And you know immediately this person ain't worthy of your love. You know. But you're like, well, if I can get them to do this, if I can get this, and it never works out that way. So when you realize for me that this person is not worthy, it's like shopping at a store that doesn't deserve to have your cash. You walk up, you get the hell up out of there. So you don't sit around later and you're complaining about X, Y, Z because they weren't worthy of you. They weren't worthy of your time, your love, your effort. Why are you giving it to them? You just don't. And even in saying that, you can spend time with them without giving them your love. You can spend time and enjoy their companionship, enjoy who they are. But if they're not worthy of your love, don't give it to them because everyone's just not. Everyone's not fit to handle the love that you may have to offer. All our loves are individually designed for us who we are. And a person can't honor and respect the love that you have, then why give it to them? Because you're wasting it. And I'll speak for my love. It's way too valuable to be wasted. If I got to keep it in a bottle for the rest of my life, I have no problem with that. It's not going to be wasted. Miss Lady Marcia going to bring you in. You know, we're going to clear this out because who knows what you're going to say, but we know it's going to be good.
I do got a, oh my gosh, I have so much to say right now. I just been sitting over here. When's it my turn? When's it my turn?
It's your turn.
I got to breathe on this one right here. So I was making feverish notes as y'all gentlemen were speaking. And so a few things that jumped out at me. Number one, we have to remember that television is programming. So, yes, they're telling us what to think, feel, believe, and how to prioritize things. Number two, I happen to like smoking out the window, too, so it's not just the guys. beyond that.
I'm on my window right now.
Beyond that, I think on, you know, my last bit of input, I talked about the communication, clarity, and consistency component, right? So y'all just walked us right into the clarity piece. You have to be clear about what love means to you, because it doesn't mean the same thing to everybody. Just like being a friend doesn't mean the same thing to everybody. How I position love, or how I position friendship or companionship, may be, you know, completely the opposite of what a potential or prospective partner, how they might view it. So you have to be, again, going all the way back to the beginning, that communication and having a clarity. Like, the clarity piece is about having a vision. It's about having a vision for your life, about having a vision for our life together potentially, and a vision for, you know, where can we go and how do we get there. And if you haven't thought any of those things through for yourself, you're only bringing a teeny tiny piece of you to the relationship. The relationship is the coming together of both parties, because other than that, you're just two individuals doing life together, but you're not in relation with one another. So that clarity piece is key. And then, you know, being careful about the words that we use when we talk about love and we talk about relationships. So a lot of times, for guys especially, y'all talking about, yeah, he about to hit the ball and chain. He about to settle down. He's about to, and it's negative. Like, you're somehow losing something instead of gaining something. Well, if that's how you feel, then you shouldn't be there. And I think we have to, again, be really, really honest with ourselves about that. Do I feel like walking into this relationship, I'm going to be settling, or I'm going to be giving up something, or I'm sacrificing? Like, those are horrible words. Like, who wants to sign up for that? Not me. And I don't want a partner who feels like they're settling down, or they're giving something up, or they're sacrificing anything for the sake of my company. Like, no, do you, boo, do all of you. Be the best of you and bring all of that into the relationship, but be honest about what you're bringing. And then the last piece, oh, Lord, you said, I had to breathe. I had to take a breath because I took a breath for a minute. You said they can have your companionship but not your love. Ouch. That would suck. And from the standpoint, it's not a wrong thing if you're honest about it. Does she know that you're only available for companionship or sex or entertainment and not relationship? And vice versa. So, like, that, it goes both ways, because there's some women who are like that. Like, yeah, I just want to kick it. I don't want to be tied down. Again, back to the words we use. So I think we just have to be those early conversations, that communication, the clarity, and the consistency. You have to have those components in order for love to even have a chance, because love by itself can't go unnurtured, and you can't nurture something if you don't know what you're nurturing. Like, how I treat a palm tree is different than how I treat a cactus, which is different than how I treat, you know, a bonsai plant. I'm not a gardener, as you can tell. But the point is, they're all plants, but they all have different needs, and that's how people are. So if all you're offering is companionship, please be honest with me about that. And don't have me walking into a relationship thinking it's X when it's really Y or Z. I think that's it for me.
I just will say this. I'm always honest about that. But I'm not sure if you answered the question.
I told you I was taking notes because I was like, oh, my gosh, this is so good.
Well, I mean, realistically, I'll clarify that statement once you answer the question. Do you is love is something at this point in your life you want? Well, all that comes with it, that may not be good. Or is this something I was going to say earlier, is it necessary? But the question was, you know, do you want love is something that you still want?
Okay, so yes, I want love, but it doesn't have to come from a romantic partner, no. So do I want to, like, again, do I want to spend life alone? No, not necessarily, but I have a really full life without a full-on, full-blown relationship or marriage. So if what we're equating love to is the confines of an intimate relationship or a monogamy or however you want to frame your relationship, I don't need that piece in order to get love. Like, you can get love and from different sources. And I think somebody maybe said earlier, like, there's different, you know, you have different relationships with different people and all of those provide you different things. And so you still get love. I'm not articulating this well. The answer is yes, I want love, but no, I don't have to have it in a relationship.
Okay. If you don't mind, I'm going to ask you to kind of explain when you said you want love, but it doesn't have to be romantic love. Can you just share what's behind that?
Well, I'm not saying it doesn't have to be romantic love, but I'm saying you can have love and not have a label on it. So let me give you an example. So I have male friends who I've, you know, been in relation with, some sexual, some not, for years. And I derive a great deal of love from those relationships as is. I don't need them to be something else that I can put a label on, and I also don't need it to be something that is publicized. So I can be in relation with this individual or these individuals independently from giving it a title. I feel like we think that you're not having love if you don't have a relationship. But in reality, every human interaction is some form of a relationship. And so when we say an intimate relationship, well, that's really talking about, you know, an emotional connection and a sexual connection and things like that. You don't have to have a label on that in order for it to be love. I hope I'm saying this. I hope what I'm saying is making sense. I know what I mean in my head, but I'm really struggling to articulate that.
No, I think what you're saying is making a lot of sense, plenty of sense. I will say, and I'm going to go back to what I said earlier, and clarify, anytime you're in a relationship or dealing with someone, I'm always going to be straightforward. I think everybody should be straightforward where they are and state, this is what it is. No, I'm not going to fall in love with you. No, I don't have love for you. And you give that person an opportunity to continue on now, because no one should ever be misled based on what someone's trying to do or trying to take or trying to get somewhere to go somewhere. So that's not it. And I think sometimes, and this is just me speaking, I want to ask you this question real quick, because you are a woman, and I think sometimes when men say things and it's not received well, women take it that they think men are trying to say it in a harmful way or whatever. But I think sometimes when a man says something and mean what he's saying and is strong about it, it gives you an opportunity to see it for what it is, as opposed to maybe immediately not liking it and finding fault with it. How does that make sense?
So what's your, I guess, what's the question? Like, that, how women take what men say?
Yeah, exactly. In other words, when I said what I just said to you a little while ago about everyone doesn't deserve your love, I don't give my love, and your response came back and said, you know, you're hoping that I'm saying that with sharing, let them know that is what it is. And it seemed like it touched a nerve with you. Maybe I'm wrong. And if it did, I'm just trying to find out what it was, because you thought I could be misleading someone, or it's based on what I just said.
Yeah, no. So it's only, like I said, like, it's not wrong, right? I wholeheartedly agree with the premise that you can have companionship and not be willing to give love. I totally agree with that. It was merely on the premise of honesty. So as long as you're honest about it and people know what to accept or expect from it, then they can move around accordingly. Versus if, and just based on what I know about you, I pretty much assumed I knew the answer to that, that you would be honest about it. But there are a lot of men out there who do not move about with integrity. And so they'll do things or kind of dangle a carrot out there. And if you're that type of woman who is really like, oh my gosh, I want a relationship, I need a relationship to fulfill whatever, then that can be a really harmful space to be in if you're in relation with a man who is only offering you companionship. But he's not, but you think it could potentially be something else. And then there's also the guy who says, I don't want to be in a relationship, but then he wants to throw up relationship boundaries. And so he's telling you, yeah, I'm not, that's not where I'm at. It's not what I want. I'm not into having a relationship right now. But then he's, you know, wanting to, you know, occupy a great deal of your time. He's wanting to question, you know, oh, if I'm going out with my girls, like, what are you doing? Who was you with? Who was there? Who'd you talk to? You know, they're asking all these imposing questions. And it's like, boo, those are relationship questions. We're not in a relationship. You said that's not what you wanted. So you don't get asked those things. And so you have guys that move like it's a relationship because, I don't know, I think as women, we assume, and y'all correct me, so this is my question to you, if a guy acts that way and he says, I don't want to be in a relationship, but then starts acting in relationship ways and wanting to throw up these fences and boundaries, is it because y'all just don't want us to give the cookie away? Or where does that come from? Where does that fall in? Because I think that happens a lot.
I'm glad you threw that question out, because I was going to start the question part of this, and that's a great question. That's the first question. He's a possessive gentleman. No man wants, if he's into a woman, let's just state this perfectly clear. If he's into the woman, he doesn't want his woman giving that cookie away. If a woman gives a cookie away that a man deemed that his particular cookie, it hurts him deeply. It just does. He can act. I don't care how strong he can act, whatever the case may be. But when a man realizes another man has basically been with the woman that he loves and cherishes and cares, it damages him. It just does. And he may never come back from that. He may never be right.
But even if he said, I don't want to be in a relationship with you.
No, what he was saying to you, in essence, is by his actions and his words, what he was saying to you is that I want to maintain you, but I want to still do what I want to do. So I'm going to treat you like I'm in a relationship with you. And even if he was, he shouldn't have been asking you those questions anyway. He should trust you enough to do when you're with your girls, whatever the case you're doing, that's your business. But what he was saying to you and what he was acting like was, I'm going to be able to play when I'm not with you, but you're going to honor me like we are in a relationship. So he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. And that's clear.
Mm-hmm, that's what I thought.
And men tend to do that. They want to basically, you know, I don't expect nothing from you, I'm not giving to you. So if I'm not giving that to you, I'm not expecting it from you. But right. In his case, he had expectations from you where he wasn't willing to live up those expectations to give them back to you. And at the end of the day, it's a wordplay and it's the game that he was playing. Simple point. I'm going to bring Mr. Charles to get a response to your question. Your question, I mean, your answer to the question, Mr. Charles.
Definitely, I would say in regards to as men, the game is played that way by many men all the time. And a lot of it comes down to whether or not the woman allows that to happen. And I think Ms. Marcy hit right on point. If you allow it to happen, then the man's going to push it as far as he can. Because it's like, okay, because it's to the point where it's like, well, maybe she really wants to stay close to me and she'll let me kind of, you know, float and play a little bit, but I still really care about all the other stuff. And as you said, that's really talking out the side of, you know, both sides of your neck. But if men can get away with it, many times some of us will. Not all, but it's a large amount of people that will. So it depends on the individual. And if they say, oh, you know, I care about you. What are you doing? Where are you going? All this other stuff. And he's not willing to commit to you. He don't want a relationship. He just want to hold on to you, make sure you don't go nowhere. And nobody else has you. Just keep you close while you go out there and find some other folks, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have to pay attention. And it's interesting, too. A lot of women, realistically, take that possessiveness and that type of questioning, like, oh, he must care about me. If he doesn't come out and say it, don't take any inference from anything else. If he's not saying it or showing it,
right?
He takes your mom out to lunch. He must love. No, because he takes your mom out to lunch don't mean he loves you. He took your mom out to lunch. Just to reach your response, sir.
Two things here. One of them is that sometimes, and I know I find myself in these situations sometimes, you can say what you mean, but the woman will go, okay, that's for now. And you're in a relationship whether you know it or not. You just in it.
You don't get asked, my brother. You don't get asked, fine right here. You don't get asked.
The booty call, you coming over, you in a relationship. You know, she hasn't kind of defined it as a relationship, but you in a relationship. Because as soon as things get a little tight, like, oh, we acting like we in a relationship. So, if you want this, that, the other, you know, you're going to be in this relationship. And I've gotten to the point where I realized, and old head told me this a long time ago, and what she says, it ain't yours. It's just your turn at that particular time, brother. It's just your turn. It ain't your, I don't care. She yelling to the top of the mountain, oh, it's yours, it's yours. No, it's just your turn.
Bro, we talked about that
so
a long time ago. That has killed
your turn,
a lot of brothers.
Have a good time and move on when it's over.
That has killed a lot of brothers. She's
saying,
There are brothers,
it is right
there
now.
Brothers in jail cell. Yo, there are brothers in jail cells right now saying, damn,
that's
she said
mine.
It was mine.
Yeah.
In jail cells right now. I mean, let's
it
get real.
You
and
see?
Okay. If you gotta ask, you know it ain't yours.
Let me just interject this. When y'all ask that, then you be mad when we be like, no.
You should be asking
ask.
It. I mean, I'm saying
I don't
you
ask.
Should not ask.
It just comes out. It just comes out by the okay.
No,
I didn't ask for this.
Don't ask.
Okay.
Don't ask, don't tell. Don't ask, don't tell.
I remember one of my buddies, he asked, and she told him, you don't know. And I guess it spoiled the whole mood right
there. Facts on facts.
Talk about transparent.
More honesty, my brother. it's like warriors.
They tell you, what is it?
They only ask... They only ask questions they know the answers to. That's all they should do.
That's exactly what I was about to say. You don't know for sure. And even if it was yours yesterday, it might not be tomorrow. Keep playing.
Yesterday's price is not today's price.
Yes. Yeah, like I said, that will hurt a man every time. It just it and you know, we act like we're the toughest of the tough, and if you go and start believing it belongs to you, something you can't control, what no one else does with their body, what they do with their time, and when you start to believe you can control and you have control of that, your head is messed up. Your head is gone. I don't care if she's your wife. I'm being honest with you. I'm not saying you're not expecting your wife to be true to you, to be all that. But when you start to think that a person you care about or not care about, what they do is based on you, what you believe and what's going to be right for you, you just hope and believe and pray that they do the right thing. But when you start to think that you control what someone else can do, your mind is gone, bro. You have left this area. And who knows where it's going to lead you to, because no one's never going to do anything 100% correctly. But when you start to believe that they have to do something that's always going to be right for you, and a lot of men believe that, once they believe they tell you they feel a certain way, then you owe them something. And that's where you get a lot of men acting stupid and foolish, because they haven't understand the process. You control no one's behavior other than your own. And once you start to believe you can control someone else other than your own behavior, you're in a world of trouble. Mr. Charles, you have a question for us, sir?
Yeah, my question is, with all that being said, do you as individuals see yourself connecting and finding love before it's all said and done?
Yeah, oh, yeah, man. Here again, like I said, I have nothing wrong with love. It's just, you know, you have to find a person to share your love with. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a beautiful thing. We are meant to love and share love and give love back. We talked about earlier what it does for you. Yeah, that's why we're here. But I'll say it again. You have to make sure or be aware of who you're giving your love to. Because she got a big butt don't mean you have to love her. It just doesn't mean it. You can love a big butt, but you ain't got to love her. Your response, DeMaurice.
Yeah, yeah, I hear all that. But I was telling Mr. Charles the other night, I'm in retirement, man. I'm done for a while.
Bro, come on, bro. Stop, knock that off.
Knock it off, bro. Yeah,
you retirement, all right.
Yeah, it's going to take somebody good to take me out of retirement.
Yeah.
I'm to myself right now. I know. You sending all them funny pictures about, you know, cuffing season or whatever.
You told me about cuffing season.
I'm just trying
to wake you up. That's all. I'm trying to wake you up.
I'm going to hybrid.
Your response, my brother. I'm trying to wake him up, man. This is a tough challenge.
I'm going to say is I got one of D. Maurice's books around here somewhere, and now he talking about he in retirement. Boy, you better quit writing books to them girls like that.
Much appreciated.
Dr. Love.
There it is. Good. I'm in retirement. You play that old coy game. Oh, yeah, I'm in retirement. Take me out of retirement.
Right. Like, yeah, Michael Jordan was retired one time, too.
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah. Touche.
Don't call it a comeback. I'm not sure if you answered the question. Lady Moss, let me give you an opportunity to answer the question. I go back to Mr. Charles.
Yeah, I think I see myself. Like, I'm open to it, but I'm not in any rush. I got a pretty full plate with a lot of things that I have going on. So I'm a hang out over in retirement land with Mr. DeMaurice right now.
Yeah. My good ear open at retirement land. Mr. Charles, this is your question, sir.
Yeah, I'm with DeMaurice. I'm going to be on retirement land. But I tell you what, over here in retirement land, every once in a while you're sitting on the porch looking around and somebody piques your interest. You're like, damn, I'm about to sign my papers. I got to get back to work.
Retirement's big. It's big. I ain't retiring from nothing. Mr. DeMaurice, your question, sir.
Yeah, a long time ago, our grandmother used to say to us that if you want to be happy and you get married, don't marry a very attractive woman. Don't marry a very attractive person. What are your thoughts to that?
Oh, man.
And that
I
ain't
just
her
told
exact
you.
Words.
Yeah, I know. I've heard those yeah. words from her. There is some truth in that to an extent. And what she was really saying is, based on your jealousy and what you can handle, that's why you should not choose a very, very attractive person. And that's ultimately what she's trying to say, because you're not going to, if you're going to be worried about what she's doing, again, trying to control and all that, you're not going to have peace. Don't put yourself in that particular situation. Your response to the question, Lady Marcy?
Don't nobody want. That's what I think. I'm just saying, like, let's be honest. The thing that brings you to the relationship table is initial attraction. So while she may not be, or he may not be, they may not be, this, that, or the other to everybody, in your eyes, they still should be. And so I feel like, you know, they say the beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but you're not gonna get into a relationship with somebody you find unattractive. Let's just be honest about that. And you want to think anyway that you got the bomb, like you got the 10. She might really be a 4, but as long as she's a 10 in your eyes, that's all that matters. And vice versa.
Okay. All right. Mr. Charles, your response, sir.
Yeah, I think that it's okay to have that the so-called pretty girl, but I hope she has something else to go along with that, with you know, as far as the a strong mental capacity, bring some other talents to the table. But the other part too, which is very bizarre, that statement is very dangerous unless you are David Justice and you think you're prettier than the woman you went. Anyway, I'm gonna leave that one right there.
I remember that.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, that was a tough one. Yeah, real tough. I think, again, you have to kind of measure that a little bit. But I'm not saying you run away from an attractive person based on what Grandma was saying, but I find some truth in it, because a lot of guys, you know, basically will look for the 10 at all times, and sometimes the 10 is an airhead. A lot of times the 10 is an airhead. And sometimes it tends an airhead because men have been chasing her and hounding her, and she hasn't developed nothing else but her looks. So, and then again, a lot of us run to the 10 because we need that 10 to stroke our ego. We're not sure and confident of ourselves, so we're trying to find someone. But to me, if you wake up with natural beauty, I don't count numbers. That's all it is. You wake up with natural beauty and you go to bed with natural beauty, that's enough. That's enough. I don't get into the numbers. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to kind of put a wrap on this and get out. Thank you all for doing what you do. And we'll get together real soon and do it again. It's When Black Men Talk. Mr. Charles, Mr. Jim Reese, Mark Elliott, and Lady Marcy. All I can say is stay safe, but by all means, stay black. Stay black is what we're going to do. We're going to stay black.